Welcome to the Reassurance Podcast, brought to you by BCU Risk Advisors, your go-to podcast for all things related to personal insurance. Whether you're navigating the complexities of auto, home, health, or life insurance, our show is here to provide you with expert insights, practical tips, and valuable advice to help you make informed decisions. I'm your host, Chelsea Rabelais, an industry-leading insurance broker for successful individuals and families. We will be breaking down the complexities of insurance into simplified and straightforward language, empowering you to protect what matters most with confidence. Welcome back to the Reassurance Podcast. We're excited to share a special episode today featuring Kelly Weiss and Jason Stratton, originally recorded on the Jason Theory podcast. In this episode, Kelly and Jason dive into the critical transition of renter's insurance and homeowner's insurance, breaking down what you need to know to avoid gaps in coverage before it's too late. Kelly's expertise and approachable style make this conversation both informative and super engaging. We're thrilled to bring this valuable discussion to our audience. So without further ado, let's jump in. We hope you enjoy.
So let's talk about the issues that with the flat roofs in Chicago.
Yes. Okay. So they have identified through years of experience, right, in actuarial data, that flat roofs in areas where you have cold weather climates don't perform well. A flat roof over the age of 10 is going to be, for the most part, unacceptable. And it's going to be, it's not going to be a rider where you add it back. It's going to be more like if they're going to offer it, they're just going to exclude roof claims. So it's going to be just reducing the coverage as opposed to giving you the opportunity to add it back.
So they'll still insure the house, just like anything from the roof, your shell lock.
Yes.
What's the five P's? Do you remember it?
Proper preparation prevents poor performance.
There you go. It doesn't matter how much money we get. If we don't close, it's no money, right? So no close is no money. I'm everything that I am because of my dad's death. And I wouldn't be as successful without his death. Hello and welcome to the Jason Theory season two. And we're almost at the end of it. I'm very interested in what we have today. This is Kelly Weiss from BCU Risk Investments. Was that all together?
Advisors.
Yeah. and we're going to talk about insurance, primarily something has to do with the house, home. We'll get into some car stuff, some, you know, things are going on in the industry. And what I really want to get done here is for someone like myself, when I buy or I rent, we'll get into renter's insurance too, because that's very important. You know, everyone comes into this ignorant in the true sense of the word. Like, no one really buys a house and says, oh, I know everything I need, what to do. I think that occurs once you have something catastrophic that happens. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, I should have done this. So instead of being reactive, we're going to try to get people to be proactive, right? Because that's what you want to do. Well, at least that's what I tell my kids. Yep. So that's what we want to do here. And tell us a little about yourself, and we'll just dive right into what people literally need to be doing to make sure they're protected in their life.
Yeah. So BCU Risk Advisors, long story short, is a boutique insurance brokerage. So what that means is that we work with a bunch of different carriers. For us particularly, we work in the high-end space. So, you know, the carriers have minimums of what they'll insure, right? Their threshold of $1.5 million or $2 million or whatever it happens to be. And we specialize in sort of custom solutions for our clients and education. As you touched on, I mean, we always joke that there's always this gap in life between things that things you're taught in school and then things you really need to know to be successful in life. And insurance, nobody teaches you that, right? Like, there's no class in high school, there's no class in college. You have to seek it out. If your parents don't tell you about it or your family.
Yeah, but what are the odds of your parents knowing it?
Yeah. That really understanding, yeah. What does liability mean? What are my exposures? Those types of things. So so a big part of what we do is when somebody comes through our door, is we like to educate them on this is why you need this. This is what this is for. And then everything from there is kind of smooth sailing once you have an understanding.
So like, if we can start from the get-go when somebody, and I know this is not really your space right now because you're on the higher end stuff, but when someone decides, hey, listen, I'm moving out of mom and pop's house, I'm leaving college, whatever it is, and they turn around and they rent a place. A lot of people don't know what renter's insurance is and why you need renter's insurance. So mm-hmm. can you just go into that space for a little bit? And then we'll just, what I thought we'd do is we'd progress with a person in their life to mm-hmm. get to the spot where you are, where like, hey, you have a ton of valuables and are you protected properly on those valuables?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, really the first stage when you, like you said, you know, getting out of school, leaving mom and dad's place, you need insurance to cover your stuff. And certainly anywhere that you rent, right, it's going to be a condition with most apartment complex or leases that you sign. And you know, from the basics, it's contents coverage, right? You want...
So contents, explain.
Contents are anything that you would take with you if you moved.
Okay. Your computer, your clothes,
yep, clothing, dishes. Shoes, dishes. People don't think about all the kitchen gadgets, those types of things. And then, of course, furniture and decorations and all those sorts of things. And it is something that people tend to undervalue, how much it would cost to replace those things. And it doesn't matter if you're a small renter or, you know, a multi-million dollar home. People tend to underestimate what it actually costs. So for any kid, you know, we do Gen 2, Gen 3 for our families. For any kid coming out, minimum, base minimum, we want $50,000 of contents insurance. And, you know, that just ensures that if there's water damage or a fire or anything like that, that you can replace what you have to live in your space.
So when there's, and what, like, hold on, let me back that up. Just so people have a context of cost, $50,000 worth of content insurance. Obviously, there's other things that, you know, where you live, you know, are you in the swamp? Are you in the city?
Mm-hmm.
Are you
region.
In the place? Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously that plays in it. But on average, what are you talking about when you're talking about content insurance of $50,000 for a renter?
So, I mean, that would be for like a kid starting out, right? They've got a couch.
What is that
run? Clothes. Yeah. So, you know, generally.
On average, like just a
couple hundred bucks a year.
So it's
$300 to $400 a year.
So it's nothing.
It's basically nothing, right?
Yeah, okay.
It's a couple coffees a month or something like that.
Okay. Right? That's what I want to tell people. Like we're talking about, you know, in case stuff happens, one Starbucks a month is all you need.
Yes. Yes. And then of course, to go along with that, anytime you see a declarations page, which is the page you get from the insurance company that says, here's your coverage. Contents are first. Next, you're going to see loss of use, which is important. People don't think about this. If there is a loss at your location and you have to move out, right? Water damage or a fire, your insurance carrier, if you have that coverage, will pay for you to live somewhere else comparable.
People don't think about that. I would have never said that was part of that insurance. And right now, because I know as my owner's insurance, I have that, right? Yeah. I need to move somewhere else, you know, and a good insurance carrier is like, where do you leave? Go.
Yep. And depending on where you live, I mean, that could be a huge expense. You know, folks out in California, right? These fires come through. There are minimal places even available to rent after these homes burn down. I mean, we have seen monthly rental expenses to live elsewhere of $50,000 a month. I mean, it can be massive. It can be millions of dollars at the end of the day.
You know, depending on what your lifestyle is and stuff like that.
Exactly. So that's another coverage that comes with it. You don't think about it until you have a loss and all of a sudden you have to move out and what the heck are you going to do, right? And then the other piece is liability.
I was going to ask you if liability was wrapped in that.
Yes. Okay. So liability will always be wrapped in your primary, what we call homeowners, and that includes renters, condo, actual freestanding homes. So liability is what protects you against a lawsuit brought against you.
Yeah, against an idiot.
Yep, against an idiot. And it could be a slip and fall at your house, or you throw a party and someone leaps drunk and causes an accident.
Okay, so if someone's of age and they leave your house after drinking and they go in a car, can they sue you?
Mm-hmm. They can. So we always say a good lawyer is going to throw the book at everybody.
Yeah. I mean,
anybody
absolutely.
They can.
Especially
right?
if they know you have insurance.
Exactly. Especially if you have insurance. And even if it wasn't really your fault, you're going to incur defense costs.
Oh, yeah. Trust me.
Just, yeah. Right? Yeah. Just to defend yourself and get yourself out of the suit.
Yeah.
So, you know, so liability insurance is, and especially in America, it's extremely litigious, right? Everybody's suing everybody for anything.
Well, your liability insurance, like, because Chicago is so litigious, is that, will there be a premium on being in Chicago versus like a litigious place versus a non-litigious place? And do those?
You know, that's a great question. I do know in Chicago, it's honestly, the liability piece on a policy is not the biggest part of the premium.
Well, yeah, I know it's really small.
Right? Yeah. So I think the only places where I can really think, the state of Nevada is like massively, like they have the highest rate of lawsuits. I know, isn't it? It's odd. It's, and someone said, and everywhere you drive, it's just attorney billboards everywhere. That's a state where like the liability might be jacked up a little bit.
Okay.
but if, for the most part, the liability portion is going to be standard on your primary homeowner's policy. Now, if we talk about excess or umbrella liability,
yeah,
that's kind of a different conversation. Yeah, that's where the rating becomes a little more customized. But yeah, but that piece is just in terms of protecting yourself from any sort of worst case scenario where you hurt somebody, or even if you don't, they're just pissed off and they want to, you know, drag you into something.
I will tell you the question I always get, and we'll go to it as, I mean, I just don't want to forget it because literally this is the question I get maybe 8 or 9 times a year. I will tell you when something occurs in a homeowners or a renters, the first call they make, I don't know why, is always to me. Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm on top of mind. And I do want you to be crippled, so you have to call me for everything. That's what my financial advisor, I'm like, yeah. Always like, I'm like, Andy, what's this mean? He goes, you don't need to know. He goes, because the more you know, the less you need me. And I always laugh. I'm like, dude, I'm not going anywhere. I just want to know. So what everyone always asks me is, you have renter's insurance, and the water from a toilet comes down and ruins your place. Is the insurance on the person above you? That's the person that's liable. Does your renter's insurance, like, how does that, like, because you don't want your premium to go up, right? And you have a deductible. Like, how does that happen when you have insurance on your items and someone else ruins your items in your apartment? Mm-hmm.
So that's a great question. And that ends up kind of, and this goes for renters or if you own a
company,
same thing.
I don't want to forget it. I'm bringing it up now, but I know it's for both.
Yeah. So the first question we ask when something like that happens, when water is coming from another unit, is what do your bylaws say? Right. So what does your condo association have in writing, or what does your lease agreement say? Most condo associations will have a sort of a subrogation clause where they say unit owners are responsible for their unit specifically. You cannot subrogate against another unit regardless of fault. And it's really put into place for those exact scenarios.
Wow.
So if that's
the norm.
Yeah. So it's very common in Chicago. There are units or buildings where they don't have that in place. And you can absolutely say, listen, this was your toilet that overflowed and it damaged my unit. Your insurance needs to pay. Right. So then you place the claim through their insurance and you kind of go through the whole rigmarole and get it paid that way. We've seen it both ways. So that's the first question is understanding, or the first thing to know is understanding how your bylaws are written if you own a condo or if you're in a rental where there's multiple units.
I wonder if I've never rented in a multi-unit that's a high rise. I wonder, like, when you sign your documents, if there's a rule list, hey, if there's damage, like, I wonder if they go through that. I know you have to have renter's insurance. So maybe they're like, hey, you know, you're on your own and you better have insurance that covers it.
Yeah. So, I mean, any lease agreement that you sign will have the insurance clause in there, and they'll state exactly the minimum that you need to
buy. One of these bigger, like a lease.
Yeah.
Because the lease agreement from Chicago does not have that. That's just, it doesn't.
It's just
the lease agreement. It's like, what is this understanding, heat, electric, this stuff, but they don't go
just
into,
for the renter.
Yeah. They don't go into mm-hmm. if something happens.
Yeah. So then in that case, I mean,
unless it's the owner's fault.
Yeah. Yeah. In that case, it might just defer back to the owner of the unit, the bylaws that they have an agreement with the association.
Okay.
So if, you know, if that subrogation clause is in place and everybody's responsible for their own part of, you know, of the building, their own units, then the renter would be responsible for their own
company. Does the insurance company take a look when they insure something? Do they say, hey, let me see your bylaws so we can tell what our liability is? Or
nope, they don't. They don't. There's generally a question on the agent side or on the broker side that says, you know, have you reviewed the bylaws?
Okay.
Yes or no. But no, it comes down to, and it's because every building can be different. I can just tell you, you know, typically in Chicago, we see it where most often you're responsible for your own unit. Had a claim in New York City though, and he was able to go against his neighbor and get, you know, fully reimbursed for all of his damages from his neighbor. So it's just going to depend on the building. So it's just something important to be aware of when you're signing for a unit.
Interesting. I would think that they would want to maybe be able to get a little bit more in depth in who the liability is, so the insurance prices could change. Like a person that doesn't get into a car wreck, they may get a lower rate than someone that's had issues.
Yeah. So really the only place where this might be getting a little too detailed, but the only place where waiver of subrogation affects the pricing, I mean, ultimately the carrier is probably, they're going to price assuming that they're going to be on the hook for anything that happens.
Worst case scenario.
Waiver of subrogation also comes into play if you're doing renovations on a home or something like that, and you have that between you and your contractor, that can affect pricing.
Okay.
Meaning you can't go against the contractor if there's an issue during a build or during renovation, that kind of thing. And that does affect the pricing.
All right. So the next thing is you've got your rent insurance, you're doing well, you want to buy your own place. I want to focus in on duplex downs, because those seem to be the biggest, right? Let's see, duplex downs, those people take the biggest brunt of everything. When the roof leaks, it's a duplex down.
Yep.
When the foundation leaks, it's a duplex down. When the city turns off the sewers, or there's an issue with the battery backup or the sub or the ejector, the duplex down. So that's kind of when you start getting into, all right, the roof is an issue. It drives all the way down. It goes through, but it settles on the duplex down people. Let's talk about the insurance that people should be having if they have a below grade portion to their house. Because I remember when the first time I bought a duplex down, I went from a top floor, I needed more space, and I got insurance. I think it was through maybe State Farm, this is years ago. And no one brought to my attention the backup for sewer and for this and for that. And when I asked the person, I'm like, I'm in a below grade. And the first thing he said to me is like, they ask us not to bring it up. That's literally what he said to me.
Yes.
Yeah, so, and it was like only a $20,000 worth of coverage. Yep. I'm like, bro, this is half of my house.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
That's kind of what every phone call I get from a duplex down person. Yep. Oh, the roof leaked. This happened.
Yep.
And, whose fault is it, Jason?
Yep.
And I'm like, man, I'm like, it's from the roof. I'm like, it's a common element.
Yep. Yeah. So, the roof down scenario and then sort of like water backup are
kind of let's do ice damming or roof issue or stuff like that.
So you're just talking like in a multi-use.
Yeah. Three flat condo building, which is 60% of the inventory
here. Yeah. So again, in that sort of scenario, we're going to defer to the bylaws first, right? So if it's found that like the association was negligent in repairing the roof or something of that nature, right? There's recourse. There may be recourse where you can go against the association's insurance to have your unit repaired.
That's your common insurance.
And that is, yes. So that's going to be like the association's common element insurance. So they're insuring the whole shell of the building.
So you got, just to hit on again, because you have to read the decks and bylaws. Mm-hmm. And where would that be in the decks and bylaws? Would that be under, it doesn't say insurance, would probably be under like common elements?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So sometimes under insurance, they will state, what the unit owner or the lessor is responsible for, and then they will also state what the association is for, or what the association is responsible for.
Yeah, most associations is studs in, so yes, like behind the drywall, mm-hmm. or sometimes I've seen it where the association does the drywall, but not the paint.
Yes.
So
paint is considered a finish.
Yeah,
right?
Finish. So studs in is your common insurance. Studs out, paint out is your own.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So we always tell people to think of it like if the whole condo building burned down, they would give you a white box.
Cool. Then you finish it out.
And you're responsible for everything else inside of it.
Yep. Okay. So the water's coming from the downstairs. It hits there. You want to look at the decks and bylaws.
Yeah. So that's going to be the first place to start. And if it's clearly written that, you know, you can't go against the association for X, Y, and Z, then your insurance is responsible.
Okay.
For it. If there is
negligence of, how about if it's negligence of the second floor or the third floor?
Yeah.
Or
so
someone on the rooftop deck that does something that's not to code or it's not done right, and all of a sudden that individual has made the damages, then do you go after that person's insurance?
So if the bylaws clearly state that you can't subrogate against another unit owner, you're probably going to hit a wall. You're not going to be able to do it. Yep.
And if it does say that you can, what is the process in terms of like getting, when time is of the essence, what is the process? Is it, does the insurance company say, hey, we're going to take care of this? And then, you know, I still haven't gotten paid on that car, so I'm thinking about that, right?
Yeah. Yes. So
I paid all that and they're still fighting to get me the money.
Yep. So there's two routes.
Who is that person?
I know. So there's
this fucking woman. I met her.
You had a tough case. You're like, I know what you look like. You had a tough case and
so what goes that way?
Yeah. So that's again, subrogation, but that deals, we're talking about between two carriers at that point. So anytime you have a claim, you have two options. A claim where you're not at fault or something happens to you, right? From someone else's issue or negligence or what have you. You have the option to go against their insurance carrier, and that could be home or auto, right? Somebody rear ends you, same thing. And to go through their insurance, and then their insurance, you're dealing with their adjuster and their service, and they are either reimbursing you or paying out for your damages, right? That avenue is favorable because it keeps a claim off of your record. So
you want to push for that. You don't want to say, let me do it. My insurance will do it. And then I'll get rebated. You don't want to go there.
Yeah. For software, it's really cut and dry. It's like you were at fault or this was obvious negligence, right? And the other carrier is like, we accept liability. Yes, we want you to do that, ideally, right? Because we want to keep claims off your record.
If you are part of the same, a lot of people in the condo world have State Farm, like have a little bit more of a, yep. Low, not lower end, but more common insurance.
Yeah.
I remember when I had State Farm and I had an issue from the person upstairs. They're like, oh, you're both State Farm. It'll be handled in-house.
Yeah.
Now, is that docking me or are they docking them since it's in-house?
So, I mean, in-house, they probably put it on the other unit.
Okay.
Yeah. You might have gotten lucky there. That was probably lucky that you both had State Farm.
Yeah. It like, you're like, oh, they're both State Farm.
Yep. Yeah, and State Farm's like, we're paying regardless, so,
yeah.
You know.
We'll the number one thing here is, well, this is good, is try to keep it on the person that affected you on their insurance.
Yep.
Don't try to take it on. If the other insurance or the other person says, hey, why don't you pay it, and then you can, because I remember sometimes it would be like, hey, you pay, and then they'll reimburse you.
Yes.
And then I've had the association reimburse me on my deductible.
Yes. So
I've had it like,
so yeah, so there's that was in your bylaws. There was something in the bylaws that said you were eligible for but you were eligible for reimbursement from the association if it was association common element that caused. So again, bylaws, right? Super important. I know it's a drag to read.
Yeah.
For anybody signing, it's overwhelming, certainly if you're buying your first place.
Read what common, what are common.
What is common?
What is common?
What is, what are they responsible for? That's exactly right.
Is the door common? If you just read one thing, read what the common elements are.
And don't assume, right?
Yeah.
Don't assume that you're not responsible for that window, because we have seen cases where it's a massive condo building and you are responsible for the windows.
Yeah,
and the window cracked and he had to replace it. I mean, so don't assume anything and read it. What are the common elements when it comes to insurance? Who's responsible for what? And is there a subrogation clause between, you know, the association or another unit? And how does that look? Right. Those are kind of the three main elements to be aware of, because that it will affect how your insurance is going to respond.
So the water comes down, to feedback of that, the water comes down, it's HOA. They are responsible. What we want to do is make sure that the person on the second floor is the one making the payments, not you. And then you want to deal, because it always seems like it always seems like this, the when I'm talking to people like, oh yeah, you know, my insurance said they'll send their person out, then they'll go after that person, but you don't want to do that.
Because
I've had friends, I have had friends that have been dropped and it's not their fault.
Yes. So that is exactly it. And I would say in the market today, insurance companies are, the carriers are desperate to stay profitable right now, right? I mean, everyone can see what's going on just with fires and hurricanes and flooding and all that.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
Right? So every natural event, natural disaster event affects the insurance industry in some way. So they're desperate to stay profitable. So our recommendation is typically if you are not at fault, and it's pretty cut and dry who is at fault, we want you to pursue the other party's insurance first, because having claims on your account is just, it's not good. It's not good for you short term and it's not good for you long term. You're going to get surcharged and they're going to look at it for the next 5 to 7 years. Every carrier, you know, and they're going to, they could determine that you're not eligible for coverage, you know, and it's just really impactful, especially now having claims. So first step, if you're not at fault, try to pursue the other party's insurance.
Now, how do you get insured properly on that basement? Like when you, like a duplex down, you know, your bedrooms are down there. It's half of your house. And the insurance carriers look at it as a basement, but it's not.
Yeah. So, so really, I mean, the term basement, really what it means is just
below grade.
Below grade.
Yeah.
Yep. Just either partially or entirely below grade.
So how do people get insured properly for below grade space?
Yes. So a big part of that is the agent needs to be aware of that, right? And I can tell you behind the scenes, anytime we get a home, we're going to go online and we're going to look at it. And certainly for, you know, condos in Chicago, I can see if it's, you know, first floor unit and then you have the below grade, very common, right? And then you have the little, the little well, or you have the, you know, the sitting area or whatever it is outside the porch. But it's just, that is the agent's job to make sure that they understand the risk and that they're presenting it correctly to the carrier, right? So when they do that, then the carrier is going to rate knowing that a portion of the risk is below grade. And they ask all the time, is the basement finished or is it unfinished? Right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes that will affect.
The money they give for a finished basement is like pennies.
So just in terms of cost of, like you're talking about just like if they replaced it or.
Yeah. I mean, it's like not the insurance that I have, right? So like, it just seems to me that when you get into that duplex down space and you have a basement, maybe State Farm and Progressive and all these other carriers aren't the best fit.
Yeah. And the reason for that is what you noted earlier. They have really low limits for
like 20 grand for full basement.
For what we call water backup, sewer, sump pump backup, things of that nature. In a city, especially when you have below grade and you're on a street, the chances of having water backing up through drains or through the sewer system is pretty high.
Yeah.
And then even on top of that, flooding, which is something different, but just anytime you have anything below grade, the chance of water coming into that space is higher.
And the flooding has got to be through the drain, right? There's different ways that you can flood. There are.
So water backup, just real quick, water backup is water coming into the interior of the house through either a pipe, a drain, or a sump pump.
Okay.
Flood is outside surface water coming into the house, generally either like through a foundation, a window, or a door.
Okay.
Kind of how we distinguish. So water backup, State Farm doesn't want to mention it because they know they have really crappy low
it's terrible
limits. $20,000 will barely get you a new floor.
Yeah.
Right? Let alone replacing drywall.
And they don't tell you how much money it is. What they do is like, oh, do you want water backup for your basement? I'm like, well, yeah, it's my finished basement. And then like, months later, you look at it, or if you have a claim, and you're like, I'm paying $500 for 15 grand.
Yeah.
So it was like I'm dating myself. This was like early 2000s. It was $546 or $550 for the backup. For
essentially nothing.
Nothing.
Yep. Yep.
And I call them up like, well, that's all we offer. I'm like, well, how can you only offer that?
Yep. And it is, they max out and that's all they're going to do. They're not going to change it. And it's because it's a high risk loss scenario.
Yeah. So like people are like, oh, I'm only paying $1,800 for insurance. I'm like, yeah, but you don't have insurance.
That's exactly right. You don't have insurance for ultimately the most likely causes of loss.
Yeah. Your highest beta, is like the highest thing that could happen to you is you don't have it.
Yes.
Like the order the odds of your cabinets falling down and breaking. No, not too well. You're insured
so
for that.
I can tell you, in working with our carriers, you are 9 times more likely to have a water related loss in your home than you are a fire.
Oh, I can believe that.
Yep. So everybody's got like fire alarms and that sort of stuff. Nobody thinks about having backup batteries for the sump pump or automatic water shutoff devices.
That's the thing
for
they
their
put
pipes.
On my. That's the thing they maybe put in my house.
Yes. Yep.
Like it has like a computer, so it's called a FlowLogic.
FlowLogic. So that's an automatic water shutoff device. So that controls all the pressure.
So they made me put that in to continue my insurance.
Yes, because that is the most frequent cause of loss.
Yeah.
Yep.
So like I have a computer. I'll explain to people. I have a computer. On my main that comes in, and it knows, you know, AI wise knows how much water mm-hmm. I use every hour. This whenever it senses that there's an amount of water that's above and beyond of what I normally use,
or even a low grade consistent drip. Yep. So it captures appliance leaks.
Yeah,
and things like
and
that.
And it shuts off. Mm-hmm. And it shuts down my water to the loss. What I do really like about it is when I go on vacation, I just go down and I hit vacation button and it literally drains all the water in my house.
Yep.
That's the best part. And yeah. I come home and...
We have stories of those systems saving people's homes. Because it honestly, it never fails too. If you're going to have like a burst pipe, it's going to be while you're away.
Yeah.
It's and this is that work.
I'm not saying it's cheap, but it was like $3,500.
Yeah. Yep.
But when you're talking about maybe $100,000 to fix a basement.
It could take a burst pipe and something that could have been a $100,000 claim, and it'll make it $5,000.
Yeah.
Because now you just have some water like, you know, in the drywall and a little bit on the floor. And it's gonna shut it off.
And they threw all those pucks in my mm-hmm. furnace.
The water sensors.
Yeah, yep. My furnace things. Because that's where I will tell you I see most water damage, and that's how my house was. That's actually what it ended up being. Most water damage I see is the condenser, is the furnace 90% that drips the water.
Yeah, the AC in it.
Drips. AC in it, yep. Plugs up. And
it's the slow drip. That in refrigerator, like the hoses behind refrigerators and dishwashers, those hoses are usually rubber and they get brittle and they drip. And then it drips slowly. And then all of a sudden, one day you look down and all your hardwood floor is buckled.
Yeah, whenever
and you're like, what the hell just happened?
And there's buckled floors.
And then, right. And then, you know, and it seems like something so little, but then you have to replace that entire hardwood floor. You have to bust up all the cabinets and take the countertops off. And then you go downstairs and you realize that you've got mold in your, you know, in the walls because it's been dripping. I mean, it's water is so destructive.
Yeah.
Whether it's slow or fast, it's destructive. Yep.
So once you sell the duplex down and then we start getting into the high end homes, who are some of the carriers that you guys work with where you're like, okay, this is, if you're serious about your contents, this is where you should be.
Yeah. So in the high end space, there are, at one point there used to be 6 or 7 big players. And we've really seen a kind of a drastic shrinking of the market over the past 5 years. So the big players right now are Chubb, which everyone
knows.
Everyone knows. They've been around for, I don't know, 70, 80 years. And they've always sort of been the benchmark in the high end space for just in terms of broad coverage and level of service and those types of things. So there's Chubb. There's Pure, there's Cincinnati, which they've also been around for 50 years, but they've always played in the mid-market space, competing with a State Farm or an Allstate. They moved into the high-end space probably about 10 years ago. They've done a nice job. And then there's Berkeley One, who is the newest to the market. They've been around, 7 or 8 years now. And their contracts are almost literally modeled directly after Chubb. So those are sort of the 4 big players. AIG used to be a big one. They have drastically downsized and reduced sort of their market share and any new business in the past several years. And that is due to, they took a massive hit in California. They were one of the first carriers to just pull out of the state altogether. So they're sort of licking their wounds currently.
Who's out of that state? State Farm.
Yep, State Farm pulled out. Farmers is not writing any new business anymore.
So Farmers, State Farm, AIG.
AIG. There's a handful of other smaller carriers. I mean, those are pretty significant.
How about Florida too? Are those carriers out of Florida also?
So in Florida, everyone is just basically drastically reduced their new business appetite. So State Farm is still open in Florida, I believe. I'll have to fact check that. But nobody's writing anything new unless it hits these, like, for our carriers, it's like minimum $3 million to $5 million homes. And that's it. That's all they want. They're not going to take the $2 million
Why do they want $3 to $5 million homes? Are they built sturdier? Is it the concrete? Or
so a couple of factors. One, they can get more rate for them at that level. And there are limitations. So anything built before 2002 is going to be extremely difficult to place. So they wanted them to meet those Miami-Dade building codes of 02 or later.
What happens when you can't get a carrier? When you can't, like, if you're in California, like my friends are like, dude, it's so impossible to get insurance.
Yep, it is. In that instance, there are a couple different scenarios. So in California, for instance, insurance has the admitted markets, right? So they all come into these states, they file with the insurance departments, what their coverage is, what their rates are, those types of things. It's regulated by the states. Insurance is regulated by the state, right? So it's not federally regulated. Every state has their own Department of Insurance and their own guidelines on what they want for their consumer. California is a very strict state. They protect their consumers. But on the other end, it makes it very difficult for carriers to do business there when you have these major, catastrophic events going on, right? They limit how much premium they can take. Their rate increases each year. So that's why you have carriers just pulling out. They just say, we can't get what we want. We can't make it profitable. We're going to leave the state.
Luck.
So in those instances, there's another market insurance, which we call non-admitted or excess and surplus. Lloyd's of London is a great example, if you've heard of that.
Yeah.
That is literally...
They insure athletes,
right? So these are the markets. Lloyd's of London is literally, I think it's been around for a very, very, very long time. Literally out of London, England.
Yeah.
So
they insure people's legs.
They insure Mariah Carey's vocal cords. So when it turns into, the property casualty side, they can take on higher risk locations. They can take on, homes maybe that have had a lot of water losses and it's just deemed not acceptable by any other markets. But they're not filed with the state. So they can charge whatever they want.
Why don't other people just not file with the state? Why wouldn't other people not file with the state?
Why
wouldn't Chubb or AIG said, you know what? Screw it.
So
London's doing it. We're going to do it this way.
Yes. So that's a very detailed question with the insurance department. And I honestly don't know the full answer to that, other than the fact that these other carriers, by the way, Chubb and AIG, they also have non-admitted.
Oh, they have arms.
Branches. They have arms, which they have developed. Chubb especially has rapidly been growing their E&S market. So that's like anything that doesn't fit into the admitted side that fits into kind of the standard regulations, that business is then moved to the E&S markets. But even in some cases, especially in California, even the E&S markets don't want certain locations, right? You're in the middle of like a brush area where it's high wildfire and those types of things.
And you should just move.
Yeah. Well, honestly,
if you can't get insured, you should move.
Well,
that could be a good indicator.
So,
that
I mean,
there's something catastrophic about to fucking happen.
That's exactly right. I mean, I always say, like, if people weren't living there like 500 years ago, there's a reason for it, right? Like, if their places were going to be ripped down by hurricanes.
Insurance companies have enough data that if you're living there and they don't insure you, because at some point you're going to be wiped out.
That's exactly right. It is extremely probable.
Yeah.
They're
in the business to make money.
Yeah. So in California specifically, right? So you can't get admitted. So you go to the E&S market. They have a third option, and it is actually a government-run program, and it's called the California Fair Plan.
Sounds great.
And it's just as great as you would imagine. It covers like six causes of loss. It's like lightning, fire,
aliens.
Yeah. It's like, it's extremely limited coverage, but at least it's
something.
Some coverage, right? And those are for the cases where they just cannot get any other private companies to insure them. So the government has created this plan. The only problem there, as you can imagine, over the past 5 years, is that
there's got to be no money now.
Kenya, it is so close to insolvency. It is really bad. And they also have maximums. You can have a maximum of $3 million of coverage. And that's it.
Yeah.
And that's for everything. That includes your content.
For people in Chicago, like, that's a lot of money. In California, it's like,
no. I mean, yeah. And that's called total insurance value. So that's literally everything all in your house, your contents, your other structure, whatever it is, all of it. But it's something.
It's something.
So it's a mess. I mean, it's obviously a kind of a state of crisis in California and Florida as well in terms of.
But that's affecting Illinois.
That is affecting everyone. And the reason for that is that because these states are so restrictive about what these carriers can take on an admitted side, right? What kind of rate they can take. Even the kind of lead time they have to give to non-renew a policy. In California, I think it's a year. You can't just, you have to give a year's notice so that they can try to find coverage.
Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very restrictive and it's just weighing these carriers down.
I can see in California when no one wants to, they've created that issue. Mm-hmm. Like the government has created that issue. So now they have to give people a year because they've made it so restrictive
so hard.
For business there.
Yeah. So what these carriers do, and it's not just California and Florida, Texas is a new state that is becoming increasingly difficult to write insurance in. And that's because the state as a whole, it's one of the only states in the U.S. where it is subject to every possible natural disaster that we have. Freezing, tornadoes, earthquake, hail, hurricane, wildfire. Right?
Electric grid breakdown.
And anything else you can think of. It's becoming progressive. Nice. Progressive just announced that they are no longer writing new homeowners in the state of Texas. Progressive, that's a big one,
that's
right?
Yeah.
So we're starting to see it already. They're starting to peel back. Anyway, long story short, it's not just these states, but there's multiple states where you have these large catastrophic risks. Obviously, billions of dollars going out the door. The carriers say, fine, we can't take rate in California or Florida. We're going to take it in Illinois. Illinois happens to be a state that's pretty comfortable with allowing carriers to take a lot of rate on their homeowners and auto.
I mean, mine's more than doubled.
Yeah. Yeah. It might have something to do with the fact that State Farm's headquartered
here.
Here.
Yeah. And Allstate.
Yep. There you go. So, right. So the insurance department is pretty lenient. And there's other states the same thing. If they're going to allow a carrier to take 20% rate increases, they're going to take it. And then that is the only way that
Illinois is basically offsetting a lot of the costs.
Illinois. And it's so funny because everyone that gets this kind of increase, right, that we work with, they call and everyone is taking it so personally. I'm like a broken record. They're like, what do you, I haven't had any losses. They don't want me. What's going on? And it's like, it's not you. We got to step back and look at the bigger picture here.
I think the one thing that I can't get not offended, but upsets me is like, right, I have like a little rental house that wouldn't fit into your guys' portfolio. And the house is from like 1940, but it was completely gutted and everything's new. And State Farm, it's, I don't know, one of the smaller carriers, not smaller carriers, one of the more general carriers, they won't come out to see that the house is new.
Mm-hmm.
And the roof is new and the electric's new. They're like, no. I'm like, well, how do you tell me my house is from 1930? Like, does no one come out and inspect anymore? It's like, no, we'll just give you the worst case scenario.
Yeah. So with those kind of carriers, I tend to call them mid-market.
Yeah.
Mass market.
What's the one with the home? The
American Family.
Yeah. American Family. And they won't come out.
Yeah.
But they're charging me as if I have a 1930 house.
So, you know, that honestly should be something that the agent should, I mean, when you are underwriting, when you're quoting homes, it is asking you if there's updates.
Yeah.
Two things. And if they're not
putting pictures in.
Yeah.
But they still recognize it as an old home.
They're just assuming that there might be some random wiring in there or something, whatever it is. Yeah.
But they could come out and inspect.
They could. That costs them money.
Yeah, but I'm giving them money. That's their job.
Yes, but they're not. Yeah, they're not going to offer. They're not going to offer that service, and they're fine with it too because their coverage is capped, right? So like you know, if it's insured for $300,000, they know max payout they're going to give you might be 120% of that. It's capped. That's it. So they're rating the exposure for that max 120%, and they don't care.
That's infuriating.
Yep.
Considering that's what you do. And I'm like, he's like, yeah, we don't send people out. So you can send me pictures. I send him a ton of pictures.
And he won't.
Yeah. He's like, I don't know what to tell you. It's like everyone things up.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's sort of a top down decision that's how they're going to handle those. And yeah. It is. And it's they're going to try
like it, just go somewhere
else. And for an older home, they're going to try to get as much rate as possible. And that's just sort of the
talking about California and Florida. So let's talk about the issues with the flat roofs in Chicago.
Yes. Okay. So roofs.
You told me this like a year ago.
Yeah. Roofs in general in Illinois. So the big thing in Illinois right now is hail exposure, right? Wind and hail exposure. The carriers have been getting just hammered on those kinds of losses, especially in the Chicagoland area. And it's, there's a couple of reasons. One is the frequency of these hail events has increased over the past 20 years. Right, Chubb came in and did this whole thing. There's a whole analysis, and it's doubled since 2001. And not only have those events increased,
that global warming
they will tell you it's all these convective storms because everything's warming. They become more intense, right? So, and not only is there more hail events, the hail is larger when they do happen. So it's causing more damage to these roofing systems. And then coupled with that, in Illinois, especially in the northern suburbs, they love a good woodshake roof. And those roofs are beautiful and they have this really great aesthetic, but they get damaged very easily by hail. And then the cost to replace them is so, so high. So that, and flat roofs in the city of Chicago proper is where we see most of those. You're a great example. The issue there is the weight of ice and snow and ice damming.
Yeah, right? Ice damming.
So everything sits on that flat roof. It's not going anywhere. Freeze thaw.
Yeah.
Every day for months. Yep.
Against the grain.
Yep. And then on top of that, everybody's got masonry for the most part, and that kind of stuff. And that very quickly bust through that masonry, and then you have tuck pointing issues, and then you've got water coming into the interior of the home. So that is, they have identified through years of experience, right, in actuarial data, that flat roofs in areas where you have cold weather climates don't perform well. And actually, even in warm weather, in Arizona, flat roofs are an issue, believe it or not. They love a great flat roof out there too, right? Those sort of adobe-looking homes.
Yeah.
But just the materials that they use and the sun baking them, they dry out, they crack, and then you sort of have similar issues with weather elements coming into the home. So
what's the right? So like when we went to shop for insurance, it was, hey, if you rip your roof off and put a new roof on, we'll do it. Everyone else was like, no, go pound sand.
Yep.
So what is going to be, is it going to be one of these off-market brands, like you said, or are you going to be able to get, are you have to buy a rider, like you need for a basement? Are you going to buy a rider for a flat roof? Like, what's their thought process on, okay, this is how we're going to handle this?
So right now, and it's kind of, this is speaking generally for the higher end carriers, flat roof over the age of 10 is going to be, for the most part, unacceptable to anyone. And that is just for the reasons that I just stated, right? The material, generally the rubber, the rolled rubber or some sort of like composite mixture. And it just, as it ages, it just doesn't perform well in the cold and warm climates. So they're going to be unacceptable. And it's not going to be a rider where you add it back. It's going to be more like if they're going to offer it, they're just going to exclude roof claims. So it's going to be just reducing the coverage as opposed to giving you the opportunity to add it back.
So they'll still insure the house, just like anything from the roof, you're shit out of luck.
Yes. Yeah, if they offer. And the same goes for the wood shake. It's either, they're either saying if your wood shake, there are carriers, several carriers, Cincinnati and Berkeley, who have just said no new wood shake at all. They're not writing a house in the Chicagoland, in Illinois, at all if it has a wood shake roof.
So do you think there's going to be lawsuits against HOA? I mean, HOAs are going to have to be like, hey, like, yeah, so how are HOAs going to handle that? Because those are the ones that govern that roof.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to bend and say, okay, here are composites that will work.
That's exactly right. So there are, the good news is there are alternatives out there that look very similar and give you that same aesthetic. I just finished up a 2-year loan claim involving a large home with a wood shake roof where the carrier declined, or they declined a full replacement. They said there's only 200 shingles that are damaged. The HOA stepped in and said, unacceptable, doesn't look right per our agreement with the homeowner. If it doesn't, you know, if there's a certain amount that has to be replaced, you have to just replace the whole thing. And
would govern, that's the bylaws.
That's the bylaws with the HOA. And what ended up happening is the claim went to arbitration, which is where the insurance company and the
HOA,
the client and their third party adjuster, hires third party adjuster, they get their own adjusters to review the claim. And it takes a long time. There's a lot of back and forth. And they ended up settling. It was not for what the client wanted, I can tell you that much, but it was a lot more than what the carrier wanted to pay. So they ended up settling somewhere in the middle, and it was because the HOA got involved. I think...
Well, can you turn around and say to the HOA, you owe me the rest? Because this is...
I'm sure they've got to have language in there that the HOA is not going to be responsible for any of that. Right?
But if this is the direction, if this is the direction that they're going, the HOAs are going, these suburban HOAs are going to have to start to, like, hey, at some point they're going to get sued.
Yep, they're going to have to give a little. And whether that's saying, okay, you can use an alternative material, or they just loosen up what is acceptable in terms of how many shingles have to be replaced, and if that still looks,
it's going to look shitty.
Nice, I know. Yep.
Right,
it's problematic.
Let's take a quick, I'm going to end on personal property, because I think that's where a lot of people have issues with,
mm-hmm.
Including me, until you explained it well. What do people need to make sure they have on personal property in terms of contents, dresses, jewelry, mm-hmm. watches, collectibles, and first and foremost, I would say if you have an issue with those things, you probably need to be at a higher insurance period.
Yes.
So let's, you know, if you have...
If you're buying designer things and then
you got a dump State Farm.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You've outgrown it more or less, right?
Yeah, we talked about that. You outgrown it. So now you're at Cincinnati Chubb, AIG, what was the other
Pure,
one?
Pure. Berkeley one, yeah.
They used to be a really big club in Vegas. and so like you have all this stuff. How do you structure that? And, you know, I know people have like a general thing, but like when you have certain items that are of certain worth,
mm-hmm.
how do you navigate that?
Yeah, great question, because there is a lot of confusion around this.
Well, there was with me too, and that's something. Hey, this is what I have.
Yeah.
Do I have what's right?
Yeah, exactly. And you tell somebody to think about what's in their house, and they're like, well, obviously I have my furniture and my clothes, but I have these paintings, you know, do I include the paintings or, you know, that sort
sports
of thing.
Sports collectibles,
yeah.
Are huge for people that I know. So
yeah.
Comic books, baseball cards.
Even like antique furniture, those types of things. So where you sort of make the differentiation between general contents and what we call valuables or collectibles is something that is a collectible is something that would have a secondary market.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, if you buy a couch and you use it for 5 years, nobody's going to buy that couch again. Okay.
Facebook.
Facebook
Marketplace.
Right. Ugh. So,
gypsies.
But if you.
So it's like, put this on Facebook. I'm like, dude, do you want those people in your home? First off, who's, I don't know. I see people sell swimsuits on that.
Oh my gosh. No, thank you. I honestly, I'm not even going to go down that road. Anyway, so when we say secondary market, we think outside of eBay or Facebook Marketplace, meaning, you know, there's a higher concentration of value in this single item. You could sell it to a gallery, you could sell it to a dealer, you could sell it to a jewelry store, those types of things. Yeah. So we're looking at things like paintings or sculptures or mixed media, whatever you want to collect, sports memorabilia, right? There's a secondary market for that kind of stuff. Comic books, even wine.
Yeah.
So is that anything? The wine market has really exploded recently, whiskey market as well. So, you know, things where it's like, once you have them, someone is still looking for that item, or that item is still of value, even though you have owned it. That's
Would you call it again? That's like secondary market.
Yeah, there's a secondary market.
Is that what you said? How did you said it's this or it's this?
Yeah, so it's kind of your everyday, you know,
the couch.
Yeah, the everyday couch and clothes, or things where somebody might want it even after it's been pre-owned.
Okay, gotcha.
Right. So so generally, in homeowners policies, there's very, very low limits, like built in for fine arts, like $2,500.
Yeah,
it's which and it's always subject to the deductible anyway.
Yeah.
So the great thing about valuables or collections policies is that you can kind of insure all of these higher valued items, watches, jewelry, paintings, and it is a $0 deductible. So everything's covered from dollar one for these items. And it also includes mysterious disappearance and breakage, which regular contents don't, right? The insurance carrier isn't going to give you a new couch because your kids jumped on it and broke it.
Yeah, yeah, right? I know what you mean.
Yeah. But if you have a ring and the diamond chips, or you lose a diamond, or you have a watch and the face gets cracked, right? And it's high valued, and then you have to take it to a watchmaker or a craftsman to have it fixed. Those types of things are covered. So that's what we want people to think about when we say, what's in your house and do you have valuables? So when we hear somebody say valuables or collectibles, you want to think about those types of things where it's like, could I, if I had to sell them, would it be considered an asset? Maybe is another way to think about it. Could I resell it if I liquidate it quickly?
Now, within that, because it's the discussion we had, within that asset class, let's say it's 60 grand, and there's certain items that are 40, 30, 20, in your higher end insurances, do you need to individually insure those items if they are, hey, like, can you just say, hey, I have $300,000, $400,000 worth of stuff, even though one thing is worth $250. Do you need a separate? Because with, you know, I'll never forget with before I moved to you, you know, I had a separate rider that was fairly expensive for my wife's ring, where in your insurance, it was all covered.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to have a separate rider for it because it was one item that was over. So it's like, hey, you know, you had 60,000, but within that 60,000, nothing can be worth more than 10.
Yes. So
because we talked about, and we adjusted because of that. So
yes.
Talk about that.
Yep. So great question. So in the mid-market world, if you have valuables, they are going to make you list out every single thing you have. And it could be a $1,500 ring, or it could be a $15,000 ring. They want to know exactly what they have, and they're going to rate accordingly. In the higher end insurance space, there are two ways to insure valuables. And one is to schedule the item, certainly list it out with the value. And the second is the blanket coverage, which is what you're referring to. And what that is you can say, you know, my total collection of watches is, you know, about 100,000. And under that limit with each carrier, they'll have per item limits. So if you have $100,000 coverage, the carrier is going to say, but we won't pay more than $50,000 for any one particular item.
Yeah, so if you have lopsided assets, it could hurt you.
Yes. So it's, you know, and
that's again, what we talked about. I'm like, oh, I have one thing, and then
that's
like,
exactly,
that doesn't work.
Yeah. And this is why having a conversation with your broker and the people who understand the insurance that they're selling is so important, right? Because you may make an assumption about how something works, and you think, yeah, I have $100,000 coverage, and you have one painting worth $100,000. Well, guess what?
Only in 10.
You're only getting 50. There's a minimum. So in that world, so how we do that is if you have, you have a bunch of collectibles, and you say nothing's worth more than 20 grand, but I have $100,000 worth of stuff, a blanket is a great way to cover that. You don't have to list out 47 things that you have, but in a total loss, a fire, or a theft, you'll get that check for $100,000. If any one item is damaged, you get coverage up to $20,000 or up to $50,000 or whatever the minimum is.
Yeah, whatever you have set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then when you have the items that are more than the $50,000 or whatever the minimum is, you want to schedule those. And you want to list those out, right? And because then we want to make sure that you are going to have the coverage that you need. A perk that comes with scheduling too is you also get up to, I think it's like 150% of that listed value. So if there's been a lot of market appreciation, whether it's a painting or a piece of jewelry, right? Like you bought the ring for $100,000, but now to replace it, it's $150,000. You get 150% of that.
What's the best way going about making sure that you do get the value for your collectibles, your watches, your rings? Do you want to have an appraisal once a year? You know, we talked about, I have pictures of everything. Like, how do you know, like, so if I have an appraisal, if I have an appraisal of a ring from 10 years ago, at least we know that diameter, what's cut, mm-hmm. the color, yep. the clarity, or whatever the 4 C's or 5 C's are, yes. all that. So then they'll just say, hey, at this time, you know, we can appraise this ring without looking at it because we have the appraisal, mm-hmm. and then that's the value you get.
Yes. So obviously, anytime you have any documentation from a high value purchase, keep it or send it to your broker and we'll keep it on file, right? So in general, with our carriers for jewelry, I think it's, they don't generally need appraisals for anything over 50,000. They're under 50,000. I'm sorry. Okay. And then for fine arts, it's like 150 or 250,000 in some cases. But any receipts you have, any recent appraisals, even you just had it cleaned and they gave you a little something about it. I mean, whatever
keep
it is,
all that.
Just keep all that because if it's gone and we didn't have a specific description for it, we want to know.
So you guys database, like if I sent you guys stuff, you guys file that and then
yes.
it's there.
Yep.
I'm just going to do that.
It's on file. Yeah. It's on file. Yeah. And then in the event of a loss, what happens is if you say, okay, I had $150,000 ring scheduled and I had $100,000 blanketed miscellaneous items. What they're going to do is the ring's gone. They're going to say, well, we have the description of the ring. They will take it. The carrier will take it to their, they kind of have like jewelry departments and gurus who do this all the time, right? And they'll look at that description and they'll go to their vendors and say, hey, if we had to replace this, what would you charge? And then they'll give you the replacement cost for them. So if it's still $150,000 for the ring to replace it, great. If it's higher, great. They say, it would only be like $90,000. You know, that's kind of how they play with that.
Okay.
For the blanketed items, it's really going to be a kind of a write down what you lost. You know, we'll kind of take a look and, you know, yeah, and it'll kind of, it's different for every case, but, you know, they're going to do their due diligence behind the scene. But
have you ever seen fights over that, or is it mostly
not really?
Not with the big guys.
Nope, not with the big guys. Yeah, and certainly if anything's scheduled, I mean, it's pretty straightforward getting that done.
At what point? And I'll let you out on this one. At what point do you think people need to, like, maybe they don't need chub on a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom, but at what point are you like, hey, this is, you're at this asset class or you're at this level, you need to have the proper insurance. Hey,
yeah.
You know, call me and call Kelly, and let's really figure out where you're at and is it time?
Yeah. So it's kind of twofold. So a lot of people ask, like, you know, what does, what kind of net worth are the carriers looking for? And from the carrier perspective, it's not about net worth. It's literally about what is your primary home value? What is your largest physical asset? More or less, how much is that worth? And do you qualify for a standard? So in a state of Illinois, for instance, if your home is $1.5 million or higher, you qualify for all of these high-end carriers. That's what they're looking for. And obviously we insure homes for that value up to, 30, 50, whatever, 100 million.
Yeah.
And they're willing to take that. From a just sort of a broker recommendation perspective, really, I mean, if you have that home of 1.5 or a condo of 500,000, those are kind of the minimums. And then you have some assets involved, you know, of any kind, whether it's like 401k or investments or those types of things. I mean, the minimum excess liability we recommend is usually 5 million.
Okay.
So yeah, if you've got, 2-3 million of assets and you intend on growing that, I mean, going with a high-end carrier is probably going to be a great fit.
What happens if you have $1.2 million house? Like, because that's Chicago, right? The average, the average house in Bucktown now is like $870,000. So let's say you have $1 million house and you just don't like the coverage you're getting mm-hmm. from these mid-majors. How do they, like, how do they get to you?
Yeah.
Is there still a possibility? Is it, like, how does that work?
There is. So the 1-5 is a general rule. There are two carriers, Chubb and Cincinnati, who will write homes under the 1.5 million limit.
Okay.
Yep. They will still offer. Chubb is going to be a little more expensive in the state of Illinois for obvious reasons, right? They've been around forever. They have a large market share, not looking to grow necessarily. Cincinnati is quite competitive, may have to drop the coverage down to a kind of a lower form where maybe some of the limits aren't quite as broad as what our carriers offer. Full water backup, for instance, with all our carriers is always covered. You don't have to worry about that. You're not getting 20,000. It's up to the policy limit.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. But again, conversation with your broker, right? And they understand what the market is offering and what is available to you, and they can explain it to you.
Yeah, I think people don't realize, and we should have started off with this, like the fact that you have what you do in your broker, there's so many nuances, like every person's situation is different.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You can take that. I've been with Kelly for a while, and she can take these situations and say, hey, listen, or hey, you know, these people aren't doing flat roofs anymore. This is what's best here. What's best here? You know, is it a mixture? Do we do progressive on the car? Do we do this here, or this here? Like if you're just calling up people, and I say the same thing about real estate too. If you're just calling up somebody trying to figure out how to insure yourself and you're not being directed the right way. I mean, for every dollar you think you're saving, you're costing yourself thousands.
You could be. Yep, absolutely.
Because you're just not doing it right. I don't care who you are.
Yep.
I don't care how much you Google.
Yep.
You know, there's no way you're doing it right. Like when you call up somebody and it's Progressive or it's whoever it is, and you're calling up and I go, this, there's so much stuff you're missing.
Oh, yeah.
And
those self-service ones make me so nervous. And I think about it all the time. Like,
just click.
Yeah. Those poor people who are like, yes, I'm getting a great rate. I guarantee you they're missing water backup. They're missing just water damage in general, have like next to no limits. They're missing.
People click.
They don't have liability limits.
I have clients that click their insurance.
I know.
And then they go, here's my payment. I'm like, dude, I don't give a shit. What you're doing is not right.
Like, listen, if it's really low, it's probably not good.
Yeah. I mean, like, even if it's high, it's like, well, are you paying for insurance that you shouldn't have?
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, and that's why brokers exist in this space, right? I mean, it is so nuanced and it becomes very complicated and it changes so rapidly. I mean, the past 2 years, I feel like our heads are spinning in this industry. Who wants what and what the limits are and what they're adding and what they're taking away and, you know, what states are right. I mean, it's been kind of chaotic.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's
yeah.
a lot.
But fortunately, when you have a broker, our job is to understand this every day, right?
Yeah,
to
just like
stay on top of
it. I never understood that, like in any industry. It's like everybody wants, I always tell people, everybody wants the best doctor, right? But then everything else, like I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like in the audience, it's always saying, like, you know, you wouldn't go around shopping a doctor, like,
yeah, who's gonna give me the lowest?
Yeah, you're great. You're a teacher and you're a fellow, you've written papers on heart surgery. But this guy's half the price. He went to, no offense to people, went to school in Jamaica, but he got his degree in Jamaica. I'm like, no. I mean, yeah. I just don't. I like, life is so much easier when you have great people around you. That's just me. And then you can focus in. I have to focus in. I'm like, oh my God, if I get broken in, is this good? No. I'm good. I can focus in on other stuff.
Yeah. A good broker's main objectives should be just to take this off your plate.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's what I'm saying.
Help you sleep at night. You know, you trust that person that they're providing you the best.
I know when we
and
had,
then you just take it off your plate and move on.
I know when we had that water thing in my family room. I mean, like, dude, it was like, whoever that company was, those people from Hinsdale.
Yep.
Like everything was just like, me and my wife sat back and were like, dude, this is insane. It was so professional. It was so perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't. Everyone there, I felt like it was like the service industry. Like everyone there was like, it was like the Four Seasons. Everyone there was like, you know, it was nice. Like, hey, do you want to move somewhere else? Do you want to stay here? I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm not moving.
Yeah.
Do you want to move all your furniture? I'm like, listen, let's just.
Yeah. It's the.
Which I had the option to do. I'm like, I'm not moving.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. The network that we've been able to build out as well has been so great. Yeah, which goes beyond just insurance, but things that obviously tie into insurance, like loss mitigation. When you have a loss, we know
We know the people.
Yep, we know what groups are really professional and really high end.
Ask your phone that you bought insurance with. Who's going to come over and do your floors or mitigate?
That's exactly right.
It's like, I don't know where to go. And they go, will you hire somebody, or we're going to, they're just going to send over. Not sending over a contractor. They're just going to send over the person. I mean, you sent over everybody. I mean, the team was there, like within a day.
Mm-hmm.
We just could not find that wallpaper. But then we finally did.
You did find it.
Yeah, it was like 3 months for a color wallpaper. At some point, I'm like, Nikki, let's just tear it all down.
let's just start over.
Let's just tear it all down. Like, it's just like, no. And I'm like, and then it wasn't off, but like it had light. So it was kind of, and the guy was like really particular. He's like, it's a little off. I'm like, bro, I will never notice that.
Yeah, you're like, you shouldn't have even pointed it out.
To this day, I'll never notice it. I'm like, man, no one, like there's different shades of black, but it was like so minute. Because the sun had leached it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Michael, can you tell us how people can get a hold of you, your contact information and stuff like that?
Yeah. So, we are, if anybody wants to look us up, it's BCU Risk Advisors, and you can look us up at bcurisk.com online. Just had our website redesigned. It's very lovely. We have had a lot of new hires, so there's some new faces on there, which is great. And then I can be reached just via email and
whatever you want.
So my email is K.
We're stalker free.
Yes. my name is Kelly Weiss, and my email is K Weiss, and that's KWEISS as in Sam, at bcurisk.com. And then if you want to reach me directly, I mean, my office number, I have no problem giving to you.
Yeah,
it's 312-795-0603.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your time. I have learned so much, and the nice thing is that when I learn things from you or for other people about my life and my situation, that makes me a better broker, because then I can say, hey, listen, this is my experience, this. So
yeah,
it's good to learn stuff, because it's going to help you in whatever profession that you're in. So I appreciate it again. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Jason Theory, and have a great this will be actually be the last podcast of 2024.
I'm honored.
This will be it. So it'll be get your insurance shit together before
25. Get your shit together for 25.
Yeah. All right. Be good. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for this special episode of the Reassurance Podcast. We hope Kelly's and Jason's insights on renter's insurance and homeowner's insurance gave you a clear understanding of how to protect yourself during life's milestones. If you have any questions about your current coverage or are ready to review your insurance needs, don't hesitate to reach out. And go ahead and give the Jason Theory a follow wherever you listen to your podcast. And as always, we're here to provide clarity and reassurance for all your personal insurance concerns. Until next time, stay safe and stay insured.